Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 365A, and it's December the 1st, 1978. This may be kind of a rambling tape for you because it's really hard for me to put my feelings together. I'm kind of punchy. It'll be 2 weeks tomorrow since the shootings took place down in Ghana. And for those of you that live in California, I don't have to describe the media barrage that we've had on television and radio constantly. Usually I stick with news over the printed word, and we're going to be talking about the killing of Congressman Ryan and the people down in Ghana and the People's Temple, and then the culmination of the murder of Mayor Moscone in San Francisco and a member of the Board of Supervisors there, Mr. Harvey Milk. All this came down within a short period of time, and I'm going to try and make some sense out of it, if I can, for you and for myself. I've worked hard on it the last 2 weeks, and I think I can give you an overall summary view of what I see. And then in the next few weeks, I'll give you the specifics to fill in the picture. I'll give you the outline now of the way I've broken down the Guyana-San Francisco mess. And then you can follow that outline, if you have the patience or are so inclined, and then read the news that came out preceding or in the future and see it along the framework that I'm seeing it. Didn't surprise me that the next stage after the Zodiac killings in California and the Zebra killings and the SLA and the Strangler and the Manson family massacres and all of these other bloody California syndromes that I've talked about for so long, it didn't surprise me that out of that racism, out of that counterintelligence operation and the meanness of the powers that be that run our state and federal offices, that such a thing could happen as happened in Ghana. But it didn't surprise me, but I don't like to say I told you so, and I don't want to tell you how bad the future is going to be, but I still feel pretty sick about this, and if you get Newsweek and Time this week and People magazine, I think that one picture is worth 1,000 words, and you should get these and look at them and take whatever information you can out of them and remember what happened here. Not only did this massacre take place down in Ghana, but what followed was the most intense racism, the way it was handled, and the collusion of the federal government. And those are the things that we'll go into for the next few weeks. The relationship I see of this event down there to my past research on assassinations and the SLA and, as I say, the California violences. Of course, one common denominator through all of this, going from the Kennedy assassination right up to what Newsweek has on the cover, the cult of death, is Mark Lane. He's prominent at both ends of the spectrum. He was right there in Dallas with Marina Oswald as soon as John Kennedy was killed, and he was out there hanging in a tree or in a swamp at the time that these people died down in Ghana. And next week on the tape, I think for those of you that don't live in California and didn't hear it, I'll reproduce his press conference, the one he had in San Francisco a month ago, what he said about the People's Temple, and then his interview when he came home from Ghana. He had a press conference Wednesday, October the 4th, 1978, in San Francisco, in which he said Jim Jones and the People's Temple was being harassed. The headline there was People's Temple Colony Harassed, and that he said he was satisfied that the concentration camp charges against Jonestown were false, and he thought that people had been misused who made these remarks. He declined to name the agent that he had talked to, but he hinted because Jim Jones had been harassed that he was going to file this large multi-million-dollar lawsuit in 90 days, and he was going to name as defendants the FBI, the CIA, the Department of State, the Internal Revenue Service, the Treasury Department, the Postal Service, because he said there's a conspiracy against 1,200 people, 1,200 American expatriates. It's an embarrassment to the government because of its tremendous success down there. And he said that it was a beautiful place to live. The People's Temple also got out. a newsletter which they mailed to me October 21st, 1978. Mark Lane said, in quotes, "I've been deeply impressed with what I've seen there at Jonestown. It makes me almost weep to see such an incredible experience with such vast potential for the human spirit and soul of this country to be cruelly assaulted by our intelligence agents." And then Charles Gary, the attorney for People's Temple, said he went to Jonestown, and he enthusiastically refers to that as a community where racism, sexism, and ageism have been overcome as a new social order, an answer to a better life. And Don Freed, they're quite a trio, Don Freed, Charles Gary, and Mark Lane. I've known them quite a few years, Mark the longest. Don Freed said in the news release, in quotes, "Martin Luther King, I think, if he could see Jonestown, would recognize it in the next step in his agenda, and he would say, 1, 2, 3, many more Jonestowns." And then the Sun Reporter out in the Bay Area had some more press conference of Mark Lane. He told about Federal Communications hassling them because they wanted a shortwave station for doctors to get medical care to save lives. And now it turns out that on that shortwave they had all kinds of coded messages and even discussed with Charles Gary the plans to kill 1,200 people down there if necessary. In this press conference, Lane described Jonestown as a model community. The visits there gave him a glimpse of the future. He added that the government of Guyana is particularly pleased at the success of the People's Temple, since it is a model for other Caribbean countries to follow. That was Mark Lane. He described the education of people in Jonestown as more sophisticated and successful than in the United States schools. And these men said there was no sexism, there's no ageism, there's no racism. He said they had education. Then Mark Lane said there's no money in Jonestown. There is no need for it. And, of course, what followed, according to Mr. Layton, one of the suspects for killing Congressman Ryan, they said there was a footlocker of $3 million cash being taken out in the woods, and then there were millions of dollars in Swiss bank accounts and in Guyana, which would total many, many millions of dollars. And then it turns out these people were crowded in rooms like a slave ship and worked 12-hour shifts and cried for food, and the white staff had meals and regular meals and dinners, and the blacks worked out in the fields. Only two people worked in the fields that weren't black, and they were forced to work and grow the food out there. Mark Lane said there's no money in Jonestown and no need for it, and they were taking gold from these people and diamonds, jewelry, and personal objects, and accrued from them and other monies millions and millions of dollars. He was particularly impressed, Mark Lane, by the quality of medical care at Jonestown, where the community's 1,200 inhabitants are served by 70 health workers. Natives cared free of charge for Indians, native Indians, he said. And Albert Schweitzer's famous hospital in Africa was compared to what Jim Jones was doing in Jonestown. That's why I want to play the tape for you next week, so you can hear Mark Lane rave about the medical clinic the people came all over the world to see and the accredited college. I'm particularly quoting Mark Lane to start my series on this because I'm very proud to say that I've hated his guts and tried to expose him for years. And any of you that listen to KGO in the San Francisco area, the all-day talk show, goes on all day and night. I've been tape recording people just lambasting Mark Lane and Charles Gary and really out for their guts and outraged at what they did in calming the people and knowing what they knew in advance, what they know now, their attorneys, and you should hear what my complaints were about Lane. The public has taken over because they now have seen for the first time what he is. As I say, he was impressed by the medical quality of Jonestown. They had 70 health workers serving only 1,200 Native Americans that had been taken down there compared to Albert Schweitzer's. He said he even had a 2.5-hour physical exam during one visit to Jonestown. Those are three different press releases that came out just exactly 1 month before this terrible rash of murders took place. In contrast to that, the San Francisco Chronicle has an article, and you'll be seeing a lot more about this subject, Tuesday, November 28th, "Robot Behavior, Orion Murder Suspect." Lawrence Layton, the man charged with killing Congressman Leo Ryan, displayed increasingly peculiar behavior even before he left for Guyana last May. Larry, too, was in, it seemed, a post-hypnotic trance. He was drawn into the People's Temple farther in since he joined in 1968. He came home once to his family in East Bay in a full surgical gown, jumped into the swimming pool. His brother, Tom Layton, 36 years old, wondered if his brother was hypnotized and turned into a robot to take orders. And he said he was a robot. The father, Lawrence Layton, said his son was a robot. I called Lawrence Layton this week on the telephone, and I'll give you some more of that conversation. His wife had died down in Jonestown. One daughter, Debbie, had escaped and is under guard 24 hours a day because she's the one who was blowing the whistle. And it's the one son that down there that's being charged with the murder of Congressman Ryan and the others, the shootout. They said that they believed that he was a robot when he came home and that he had taken orders. And they were wondering, the Layton family wondered what protection he would have at a trial since he seemed to be a robot in the hands of Jim Jones. And the father is a professor at San Jose State, I believe, and he's taught at the University of California, and recognized that his son was really in a post-hypnotic state. The San Jose Mercury, November 29th, 1978, has a two-page article, and I, from my papers, 10 papers a day, I'm just inundated with news, but this two-page article here just counteracts the kind of bullshit that Mark Lane was saying a month ago, and Charles Gary knew about. He was very revealing on KGO this week, but the San Jose Mercury just gave some examples. Jim Jones had said to the people down there, "You complain that we watch every move and we judge you. It's true. I make allowances for what I see you doing that seems other than it should be. And on the other hand, I watch your pain and it tears me up." He had a population there of 80-90% black. He was described as being a secret racist, that he wanted to enslave and kill as many blacks as possible. A man named Richard Clayton said that he thought the whole purpose was to kill as many blacks as possible. He really only trusted whites, said Juanita Bogue, a 21-year-old survivor, one of the two whites out of 75 who worked in the fields. Her sister was the other. If a black person accused a white person of being a racist, Jones would respond to make you think he was a racist himself, and he would praise all white people. In the radio room, in the office, they were all white. He'd pit whites against blacks. He had a constructed area where they would meet, and he'd argue that whites should be consumed with guilt if they make blacks suffer, and then he would tell them on the loudspeakers that the best workers he has are whites. Mrs. Bogue said he was pushing racism wherever he could, and after he arrived in Jonestown, he had a religious proclamation on the steps of a Georgetown Catholic Church, which I think is interesting, and then went into Jonestown, where he stayed until he died. This was Jim Jones. This particular article tells about isolation and power, and I'll give you more about people being stripped nude and forced to swim in the swimming pool in front of people, and then were beaten till they were bloodied. They had no freedom. You couldn't leave. If you talked about it, you got a beating, and you were put on public demonstration. A crime down there was to talk about wanting to go back to the United States. One man talked about it, Gerald Parks, and he was dragged at 5:30 in the morning out of a jail cell and put digging ditches for 12 hours, and he couldn't get a break from 5:30 in the morning till evening, and he had to keep doing that down in Jonestown. The labor was free. The slave labor built a house for Jim Jones, and he had a screen door and a mosquito net, which nobody else had down there, and then he'd pore over his files. He used all kinds of drugs and amphetamines and injections, and the other people slept in community rooms that were 14 people to a room, 10 by 12, in a climate like that that is very warm and sticky. The room is 10 by 12 feet, and 14 people lived in that cottage with no way out. There was a port cut off, the Port Katuma, and there was no escape from that island. There was absolutely no way to escape, and the blacks worked 12 hours a day. They got a spoonful or two spoonsful of rice, and they wrote letters, some of them, about passing by the windows and seeing the food and other people eating it. Now, Jim Jones had tremendous sexual hang-ups, and we'll go into some of those as time goes on the other tapes. But Mark Lane had a press conference, no racism and no sexism. He complained that his penis was too big and that he had to suffer by relieving himself all the time. And he taught people to be homosexuals. He told them the virtue of homosexuality. The men were to sleep with men, women with women. And he said that way you didn't produce babies, which sounds more like Adolf Hitler than any kind of real socialism. This was the same kind of socialism that Adolf Hitler had. And there's a story here about two people that took a liking to each other. There was a man and a woman, young couple, and she worked in the bakery, and she allegedly gave him a cookie, and Jim Jones heard about it. So he put a mattress up on the stand of the pulpit there and made them take off their clothes and said they could make love right here and now, brought in the mattress and tried to get them to demonstrate because they took an attraction towards each other. This review in the Mercury, and this is just one article. I mean, I'm sure many of you have collected them in the last 2 weeks. He used people like playthings. He toyed with them. They were very simple. They had some of them never a high school graduation. He picked guards that he carried that had guns around the camp that conformed to every thought. And it goes on to say that he had homosexual relations with all the guards. They were his lovers. And he'd announce it to the people. And those were the people that guarded the camp. And those, a lot of the people that are down in Jonestown now under arrest or witnesses for the trial. Tim Carter from Burlingame, California, former heroin addict, was Jones' PR man in Georgetown, and he's the one who helped with the bullying around and walking with the gun and scaring the people who were working and terrorizing them. Sometimes he would tell them they were going on a trip to Cuba, and they'd take one truck to a boat. There's a harbor there with a boat that goes out the river. And he'd make other people walk 15 miles to Port Katuma, and then the trip would be called off, and they didn't go to Cuba. That reminded me of the people that worked in the Nazi concentration camps at IG Auschwitz that walked 6 miles to work and 6 miles back, and rain or snow and no shoes, and if they died on the way, they died. And that's the way they worked. He walked these people. And again, from this article in Mercury, Jones fidgeted and protested the visit of Ryan. He didn't want him to enter. And when he was allowed to walk in, the spell was cracked, and Jim Jones knew it. And that was the beginning of the end. A box of cyanide had been delivered. A package came to Ryan's compound, to Richard Clark, and it was stored away in case Congressman Ryan saw something he wasn't supposed to. And a member of the crowd broke ranks with Ryan when he was about to leave, and 9 of them wanted to leave with him. And this article says, you should have seen Jones. He offered us money not to leave, the person who was down there is recounting, and they couldn't believe that a few could get out with Ryan, Congressman Ryan. They offered him money also in Washington, D.C., not to come, a large sum of money if he wouldn't come, but he turned it down and insisted on coming. I'll go back to quotations of many articles just in case you don't have them on future tapes, but I just want to show you the sexism and the racism just from one article, one day, the type of stuff that's coming out in the robots. I think that's interesting because Lane was adamant against my talking about mind control in 1975 at the conspiracy conference in Boston. And I've said that many times when I was at Flo Kennedy's house in the summer, spring of 75. He said, I'll never appear with you publicly. People know you're crazy. There's no evidence of mind control in the United States. I wonder how deep his relationship was. This Jim Jones operation was going on. He came in the last month to be the attorney for Jim Jones. But how did Jones select Mark Lane, a man who was adamant against mind control and the intelligence using mind control, when that's what this operation was about, and Lane turned out to be their attorney? It's a very dangerous thing for two attorneys like Charles Gary and Mark Lane to assure the American people and the Congress and the news media of this enviable institute, medical institute, educational institute, the privileges. Lane said the reason the United States was fighting this operation of Jim Jones down in Guyana was that we were embarrassed by the success of what he could achieve. And it would be an embarrassment to the United States to see the people could leave the United States and live without drugs, without television. It turned out they were heavily drugged. They were tranquilized. There were tranquilizers, drugs in the food, drugs everywhere, a laboratory filled with drugs, and Jones was on drugs. And Mark Lane had said, the United States government is embarrassed because there's no sexism and no narcotics, and they're doing their thing so eloquently that it's a model for other countries that would embarrass any country to see. That was the Jonestown that Mark Lane described not a year ago, not 2 years ago, not even three, but October 1978, 1 month before Congressman Ryan went down there. Now we get to the nitty-gritty of what is Jonestown about. What happened? What's going to happen in the future with the hitmen, the organized crime, the $7 or $8 million cash to kill public officials, to kill newspaper people? What does it mean? How did it form? Where is it going? And that is what I'm going to do with you the rest of the time on this tape. I hope I can do the outline on this tape and on the other side so that we can go into the details next week. But I took all of the information of the 2 weeks that came down, and I'm going to read you the outline that I'm working with. I've broken it into approximately 70 different manila folders. And into each of these folders, I will put the articles that I've collected or the write up the tapes from the radio talk shows going almost 24 hours a day for 2 weeks and into the future, and then come up with a story bigger and even more frightening than the SLA article I wrote. The SLA is the CIA. Well, this is the baby of the SLA, and it produces a monster bigger because the questions I asked in 74 weren't answered. If they were answered, I promise you, we wouldn't have this in 78. If you don't have that article, you can order it from me. They're a dollar plus postage. Read it carefully. But this is the outline I'm doing on the Jonestown massacre. What happened, the history of it, and what it means to your future. In the first section, I have chronology of events because the chronology is always important. The dates that Jim Jones went to Brazil, the day that he moved up to Ukiah. He goes to Brazil for a year and a half. He's with the CIA, then he has $100,000 and goes to Ukiah. The date he was in Bloomington, Indiana, years before Emily and William Harris were there, but what date was that equivalent to the Georgetown Foundation formed in Bloomington, Indiana, that Tom Charles Houston later was a part of, and Spiro Agnew. The chronology of Jim Jones, of the land purchase, of the assurances of people that everything was going all right, their lives, when they appeared to be robots, anything that has to do with time sequences will go into one section called chronology. Then always is the motive, the script, the summary of what is the camp about. I have five Roman numeral sections. This is section one with five sections under it. And always there's the motive. And when I do my research, I come up with what I think is the motive, and then I look for all the supporting evidence. And if it doesn't support what I think is the motive, I can change it later. But gauging by the 2 weeks of news in my past research, I would say that there was more to Jonestown than what you think was happening. I think that clinic of 70 medical people was for experimentation. I think it was to smear all the Democrats by giving him a role by being instrumental with everybody from Senator Humphrey and Shirley Chisholm and Bella Abzug, or the Carters and Willie Brown and Dimley and Mayor Moscone in San Francisco, to smear all the Democrats and get them terribly involved with something that comes out corrupt and tainted with racism and murder and death. It outdoes Watergate. Watergate was in 72. And the seeds of this came down in 72 and began to blossom in 73. I also think if you see the movie The Boys from Brazil, I would call this The Boys from Guyana. I think the contingency plan, and I'm going to go into that, that's next underneath here in this first Roman numeral section that I have. One, the script was to have a place to experiment on black people, mind control, electrodes, sexual deprivation, fear, mass suicides, test emotions of people who have known to be addicts, those that haven't, test their violence, and so forth. and have a testing program, an experimental program where you don't give a damn about the people, but test them. And the problem was that if any person came in, whether it was Congressman Ryan or any single person, if any person came into there, they may see the seeds of what you saw at Auschwitz or Dachau or Treblinka. In the event that an invading army came, whether it was one news person or one person who left with information, in the event that they came, there had to be a contingency plan to destroy all people involved, because we would find out that they had electrode implants or experimentation stages. And I'll go into this further in detail. I think this is why the Guyana government didn't go in, our State Department didn't go in, until those bodies were rotted beyond recognition. The Army could have been in 4 hours. Our fleet was in Cuba and Guantanamo. We have military bases in Venezuela, certainly over in Trinidad and all around. And besides that, the property was rented by Jim Jones, who's an American citizen. So I don't see how much it had to do with the Guyana government. There was an airport there. We had experience in jungles in Vietnam. He had clearings there. He had vegetable guards where helicopters could arrive to take dead bodies away, so they could have arrived on the premise to come in with troops immediately. The minute a woman was killed in Georgetown and her children, three children, had their throats cut, the troops should have been in there within hours. And if it was dark at night, they should have been in there in the morning. And I believe that there were about 45 people in Georgetown that lived in Jonestown, 126 miles away, who could have identified the bodies within 24 hours. And families could have been flown down from San Francisco. They had the list of members there. They could have been down within 8 hours or gone to New York, then down to Georgetown. It wasn't that difficult. It didn't have to cost $10 million to send them to Dover Airfield in Delaware and have the bodies decayed and rotten and out in the sun. I think the reason they stalled was to make sure that it would be impossible to determine anything on them or to see their faces. And that's why I think they were lying face down, because many of these children were wards of the court of California. They all came from San Francisco, and the juvenile court had given them to Jim Jones for experimentation. And I'll back this up with research I had done in 1972 and 73, and somebody would recognize that their kids had been shipped down there. The circumstances under which they died, the children were forced by the adults to take poison. It wasn't a suicide, it was a murder. And those that didn't take it were going to be shot. And because there's no autopsy, they can't determine cause of death. They've already embalmed them. And they can't get insurance because they're not identified. And there's a lot of complications here. And not one single one of them had to take place. They could have been in there within 8 hours and cleared everything out, or been well on their way to clearing it out. The contingency was that in case anybody found out what was going on in that place, everyone would have to die. They had the weapons, they had the cyanide, they had drugs, they had tranquilizers. And the key is, what did they have to know? If these were simply poor black people down in a community in South America, why would you need hit squads now with $2 to $3 million to float around and murder anybody that talks? The only thing they could talk about is what they were doing down there. These were poor people, no education, as I say, drug addicts, some whites, not that many, a handful of people. And what in the world would be the secret if they wanted to go with him, if they were mesmerized with him, if they took suicide, like Time magazine says, the cult of death? Was the cult of death the people inside the compound, or the 40 or 50 people in Georgetown now who kept the rank, the goon squads, to murder anybody who got out? And the cast of characters, of course, I'll go into the background and biography of where they got their education, medical training. So far, there's only been one doctor named out of a medical team of 70, this Dr. Schock, who went to medical school in Mexico. And he administered the cyanide with a nurse, and he's dead, or they said he's dead. We don't know about the nurse. But the first section I'm doing under Roman numeral 1 will be chronology, the summary of the purpose, which I say, and later you'll see why I believe it was a center for experimentation. As I say, these are the boys from Guyana. And because of his time in Brazil with the CIA and wanting to go to Argentina and traveling and money, and food brought to him by the American embassy, it could easily have been a continuation even of cloning or experiments on women or children. See, we don't know what was going on because the bodies were all turned over face down and were rotted before any person was allowed, and then only the U.S. Army, after they were completely rotten and putrid in the sun. So it's impossible to look in their uteruses or in their bodies and even begin to know what kind of experiments were capable. I believe Time Magazine or Newsweek said this week that there were electrodes done on the children's arms and legs, and that's the kind of experimentation I think was going on down in Jonestown. Not a very pretty picture, is it? But this is what I think was going down in Jonestown. The section I'm doing under Roman numeral 2 has to do with the contingency plans specifically. Suicide. The suicide studies of the CIA. The suicide studies such as Candy Jones telling herself, being told to kill herself. The suicide study of the SLA that they tried to say they wanted to die inside that burning house, where actually they were shot at close range because they tried to leave the house. The Jim Jones suicide shot, where he is shot in the head, lying on the floor, and the gun that shot him is several, two or three buildings away. How in the world can you call that suicide? The gun wasn't even down by his side if he wanted to die. We know that the CIA has done studies on suicides, so this really is tantamount to cold-blooded murder. It can't be a suicide when you study suicides and have a captive audience and force them to drink a poison or be shot. We'll do more on the next side on this outline I've done.